Welcome back to another episode of Providence Coffee Talk. Pastor Charles here, and it's always good to come to you guys, especially kind of towards the end of the week. I've noticed that I try to keep things rolling to the first of the week, but sometimes it doesn't make it until the end of the week. But this has been one of those unique weeks where there's been a lot going on, and I'm honest, it's kind of at a standstill of trying to think, okay, well, what can we discuss next? What are some things that we can talk about? So I want to encourage you guys, if you have any topics or ideas that are kind of rolling around in your head, maybe some things that you're thinking about, some stuff that's going on, don't be afraid to email me, especially if it's one of those things where you're like, hey, I've got something crazy that I would love an answer for. Shoot me those ideas, kind of give me some thoughts on some things. You can just email me at charles@pbcshawbro.com. And I look through those things when they come in. And so it's always good. I mean, if you've got something that God's laid on your heart, by all means, like, let's talk about it. So today's going to be a little bit of an interesting topic, just because it's things that I've noticed within just conversations that I've been having with peers and colleagues and just different pastors, you know, across multiple states. But so it's going to be a unique topic today, and I am excited about it. But I think it's also helpful for us, and it also promotes some resources that are out there to kind of help us as well. But before we get too plugged in on that, let me first off give you a couple updates of some things that are happening. First off, we have our Baptist Women's Day coming up on the 16th. This is going to be an amazing day because we've got so many things that are happening that day. And it's a great way to just celebrate all that the ladies of our church are doing on a regular basis to do missions and to reach out to people. So I want to encourage you, be here for that day. It's going to be an exciting time. Also, that's the same day as our senior Valentine's banquet. So our youth are hosting that, and you have a chance to be a part of that as well. Then on the 19th of February, on the 19th of February, we are going to be starting back our men's Bible study at 6 a.m. And that's Wednesday the 19th. And we're going to start off with a kickoff in the book of Daniel. And I'm super excited about kicking off the book of Daniel. I think it's going to be fun. I think those of you guys that attend are going to have a good time. So make plans, be there. You're not going to want to miss out. Then we have our parent conference coming up April 4th and 5th. Parent conference is a super great time. I always want to encourage you to get plugged in on the parent conference because there's just so many things that we can learn and continue to grow and just be encouraged in. So anytime that you can find a chance where you can grow and be encouraged, it's always good to get plugged in on that. We have a little bit of childcare that we can give you. Also, we've got food there. So food's probably the most important part of all of that. So always want to encourage you to be here for food as well. But yeah, those are kind of some of the big things that are happening, big things that are kind of coming up and going on. So I would encourage you, if you haven't gotten signed up yet, please do so, because you're not going to miss out on that. All right, today is coffee. Let's go into a little bit of coffee for a second. This is a coffee that actually roasted, and it's been super smooth this week. And it's a, again, it's one of my favorites. It's an Ethiopian natural. People always ask me, what is it about the Ethiopian natural that you love? And I said, really, it's, to me, it's not just the Ethiopian. It's most natural processes anyway. For whatever reason, I love that, just kind of that dried coffee process where you get a lot of the flavor of that coffee cherry. But on top of that, it is also, I don't know, for whatever reason, most of the coffees that I get from Ethiopia or even Kenya, some of the Burundis that I can pick up and roast have this really kind of a sweet undertone with a lot of kind of fruit accents and like berry accents. And I just love that. And I remember the first kind of Ethiopian natural that I got that was, it was years ago. But it had a blueberry note to it that, sure enough, when you roasted that and then you brewed it and then you tasted it, you literally tasted blueberry in that first sip. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I think that's what kind of got me hooked on it. Because long story short, when Melina and I were in seminary and we were dating, before I was like real into coffee, I just drank a lot of coffee. I didn't really care where it came from. But there was an Exxon just down the street from her apartment. And on Saturday mornings when we want to go book shopping or just kind of go hang out, we'd go there to that Exxon because they had a wild blueberry coffee, and it was so good. It was so much fun. Even now, I catch myself going to the Dunkin' drive-thru because Dunkin' has a blueberry syrup that you can put in your coffee. And just reminds me a lot of that. So anyway, so I tend to stay with a lot of these more kind of African natural blends of coffee. And it's just, it's really great. And in fact, I think that the first time that I came to visit the search team at Providence and came to North Carolina, they had gone to a place in, I think it's Kill Devil Hill, called Ashley's Espresso Parlor. And I always recommend, if you're in Kill Devil Hill, go to Ashley's. It's a great coffee. They roast it right there. You can see the big roaster right there in the shop. And they got me a Ethiopian one time from there. And when I got back off that plane and got home, I immediately ground it up and roasted it. And I mean, that's, you know, 99% of the reason why we moved to North Carolina. Just kidding. But it was a really good cup of coffee. And so, you know, shout out to the search team. You did a great job wooing me. But if you guys even listen. But so today I do have an Ethiopian natural. It is great. It's been one of the better roasts I've done in a while. It's got a lot of those kind of fruity, kind of peach, wonderful blueberry-ish type tones. And so, yeah, so that's going to be our coffee today. So before we get started, let's take a sip. And let's get into it. So I've gone back and forth a lot on this particular podcast. In fact, I actually recorded two of them earlier this week. And I think both of them came from a place where it was just not a good spot for me to be talking about some things. And I think part of it was dealing around just some anxiety and stress that was kind of coming up, as well as just some things that I've been seeing in the spiritual warfare life that go on within our churches today. And part of it is just kind of this overall sadness that you just kind of have that exists about the way that churches are going, and even the way at times like church leadership is struggling. And being on the side where, you know, you're responsible for managing an organization and kind of helping lead it and guide it, especially when it comes to the spiritual realm of our life. It's one thing to own a gym and say, hey, listen, if you want to be physically fit, this is what you're going to have to do, da, 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 da. And you got your trainer and everything's there and here's the equipment. And you just kind of put people on a plan and tell them, this is what you're going to have to do. But in the spiritual world, it's so vastly different than that, because everybody's in a different phase and everybody's in a different place. And, you know, you might create a schedule for someone to follow and say, well, here's the plan. Like, if you want to grow in great faith and maturity, here's what you got to do. But really, it's going to be dependent on the person. And on top of that, a lot of times, the reality is that person may still show up every single week, but yet have no desire to kind of grow in maturity in Christ. And so church is just that unique world that exists where you got all these people that meet in one room, you know, 1-2 days a week, but yet you really have to draw them into that understanding of the importance of growing spiritually and why it's important to grow spiritually. And then also figuring out, how do we marry that within the regular life of our church? Even today, Melina and I, we were talking, and one of the things that we've talked about is the transmission of spiritual language that exists within the life of the church. And it's one of those things where you always are listening and you're hearing people talk and you're listening to people talk and you're trying to understand kind of where they're at. And it's when you can see the conversations at your church shift from just, hey, how's your week, to let me tell you what God has done this week. When you start to see those language shifts where it's not just about how work's been or how the farm has been going or how the children are, but you're shifting that language from, can I tell you what God has done this week? That's really kind of a unique piece to be in that identifies a lot of spiritual growth. And I think one of the other things that we're going to talk about today that I think identifies a lot of growth spiritually is the ability for pastors and church leaders and church lay people to be able to recognize and handle conflict in the church in a healthy manner. And like I said, there's been a lot of things that I've kind of picked up on over the past week of just different things that have been going on within kind of a sphere of leaders that I'm a part of. And a lot of it kind of centers around this idea of just general conflict. Conflict in and of itself is not a bad thing. Let me first off start by saying conflict is not necessarily a bad thing. A lot of times conflict helps to get the ball rolling. Conflict can help flesh out an idea better, because instead of it just being, hey, here's this idea, run with it, sometimes through intentional and grace-filled back and forth, where there's a lot of trust that is built between the parties and people, conflict can be a good thing. But I've noticed that even within our culture and our world today, anytime somebody pushes back against somebody else, it's almost like there's this personal offense that's taken. And that's not really, that really shouldn't be the case, especially in the church. I think that sometimes when people push back against an idea, it has nothing to do with their personal interpretation of who you are, but it has everything to do to make sure that there's clarity, that there is understanding, and that the conflict that does come up is conflict that is there to promote healthy growth moving forward. But in reality is sometimes that just doesn't work. So, you know, one of the things that we want to look at is, and I've got a text that I'm kind of basing some of this a little bit off of, but I always recommend it to people. It's called The Peacemaker by Ken Sandy. And this was one that I picked up in an administrative class in seminary. And it's so good in helping kind of understand what it means to be the peacemaker in a church and in relationships. And, you know, that's kind of me in a nutshell. I always want people to be happy. So I'll do anything and everything I can to make sure that people are happy all the time. And I just want there to be peace all the time. And I remember there was moments where one of the churches I served at, I would sit in the staff meeting and we'd talk about some of the things that are going on and some of the struggles that our people would be going through and the different things that would be taking place in their life. And they were very difficult things and hard things. And even for us as staff, I think there were times where we dealt with a lot of frustration and hard things, and we'd voice those things out and the pastor would sit there and he'd listen. But in reality, he's like, hey, listen, you know, everything's just great. Everything's good. There's no reason to worry. There's no reason to stress. And you're sitting there on the other end of that table just going, no, there's a lot of reason to worry. And there's a lot of reason to stress. And I need your help figuring this out more than just putting a Band-Aid over my feelings at the time. And so, but I say all that because sometimes in church life, we do come into positions of conflict. And sometimes we do come into positions where we disagree and we just are trying to figure out the right way and the right solution for things to happen. And a lot of times conflict in church arises, you know, we try to understand conflict. A lot of times it arises from this, you know, a few causes. One could be theological. I've noticed of churches, even in our area, here in Eastern North Carolina, where we've had churches that have split based off theological differences. And a lot of times it's either people are scared of understanding a new idea, or there is a huge disagreement about how things need to be handled. So that range kind of really varies. It's not like there's a huge, this is what's going to have to happen. But the other issue that really comes up that causes, I think, a lot of conflict in churches is just in the area of leadership. Leadership can cause a lot of conflict, especially when the leader just wants to sweep stuff under the rug and not actually deal with stuff, or when there's not vulnerability and there's not accountability. That's one of the things that I've always strived for at Providence, is to make sure that there are accountable things for me as a pastor, to know that there are people that I am answering to, people that I'm reporting to. People that can be there when it seems like things are getting a little bit crazy, that they can go, hey, let's pull back a little bit and really think about this more. And I'm so thankful that we have those things in place, because it really helps me understand more of how to lead and guide and direct. But leadership is really one of those things I tell young pastors all the time when they start getting into ministry. I tell them, I say, hey, listen, you probably will never get fired over your theological things unless you kind of go crazy. But there's a really good chance that if you can't handle yourself in leadership and administration, you're going to probably get canned. And because churches are just not in a place where you need people standing by that cannot help that church grow and move forward and establish a vision. The churches in America today, we're losing them so much. I mean, when you start looking at the current reports that are out there, most of the evangelical churches that we see in America today are struggling to keep their doors open. And part of that is just due to a lack of leadership to draw people into messengers of the gospel, ambassadors of the gospel, proclaiming it on a regular basis. So then we have to begin to ask that question of, well, then how do we handle some of these things? Like, how do we handle some of this conflict? How do we get to a point where we're making peace? See, the reality is conflict can be an opportunity for great growth in our life. And church conflict can be an opportunity for great growth within the church as well. Because it's a lot of times through that, when we take the role of pride, when we take the role of misunderstandings, and even when we take that role of like unmet expectations, when we take that stuff off the table, right? Because the reality is sometimes we're just prideful people and we want our way. And because we want our way as opposed to what is right, we're going to fight tooth and nail to get our way. Or we don't fully understand what's going on. So instead of trying to understand what's going on, we just throw the baby out with the bathwater kind of idea. Or we have these expectations. I remember sitting in a meeting at a church I was at in Dallas, and the pastor had set a group of people over me, and I was young and I was, you know, partly naive, but at the same time, I still had a lot of learning to do. And I recognize that as I get older. But one of the things I did is I sat down in a meeting with a group of people talking about youth ministry in our church. And what I thought was going to be a very productive meeting about youth ministry turned into being just this like, do you not care? Do you not want our ministry to grow? Do you not want this? And I was like, we're running like 150 kids on a weekly basis. We've got a great Sunday school program going. We've got a lot of leaders jumping in here on a regular basis. We're loving these kids. You know, you want 300 kids showing up on a regular basis, but there's no structure for it. There's no way to make it happen yet. We don't have the infrastructure for that right now. And so there was this unmet expectation there that they wanted these certain things, and yet there also wasn't this understanding of how all that worked out. So when you really get into sometimes the way that conflict comes up, sometimes our pride gets in the way. Sometimes we misunderstand. Sometimes the expectations that we have on other people become unmet, and it just causes a lot of frustration. And so there is a path, though, to peacemaking. I want to look at some of these today of just kind of like helping us understand how we can create peace, though, in those moments where conflict is coming up. And the first thing is really kind of even the purpose of our church moving forward. The first thing that we do is we glorify God. We have to respond to conflict in a way that honors God. Calling someone out in public and making them feel bad just because you have a grievance is probably not the God-honoring way to take care of some conflict. Now, maybe pulling them aside afterwards and saying, hey, I need to understand more. Hey, I've got some issue with this. Or, hey, do you mind if we have a conversation about some of these things? That's probably a better way to do it. You know what I'm saying? But you always want to make sure that you're responding to conflict in a way that honors God. One of the ways I've noticed, and I've always made it a point to say this, that as a pastor, I would never allow a meeting to get to a certain volume, ever. I would rather shut a meeting down completely and dismiss an entire group than allow a group to show their ugliness in front of each other in a way that does not honor God and does not honor the church. So we always have to make sure that we're glorifying God and we're responding to conflict in such a way that it honors God. Jesus responded to conflict all the time. We're going to talk about it this Sunday in Mark chapter 12, that when the Pharisees and the Herodians, or the scribes and Herodians, came to entrap him and cause different things, they're trying to create conflict. And yet Jesus takes a very humble approach and a very simple approach of how he responds to that. And I think that's so beautiful for us to remember that the Christ that we are claiming that we serve took a very humble approach when it came to conflict, and he did an approach that honored God, and we have to also model that same thing. So always making sure that we glorify God in the midst of our conflict. The second thing I think that we can look at is getting the log out of our own eye. I mean, think about it. How many times do we go and address something in somebody else's life, but yet we haven't addressed the sin in our life? Or how many times have we gone to address somebody else's misunderstanding or somebody else's poor leadership where we haven't really looked back and said, well, have I done those things that are being asked of me? You know, it would be like me standing up every Sunday morning and saying, hey, I really need you guys to go out and be ambassadors of the gospel, preaching the message of Jesus, proclaiming it in the streets and the communities and with your coworkers and your family. Like if you could just really allow the gospel to permeate everything that you do, that would be great. And then you coming in to a conference with me and saying, hey, why aren't you out sharing Jesus with my friends? You know, pastor, I thought you need to go out and share Jesus with my friends. I'm going to probably step back from that conversation and say, hey, look, I love you, but I don't know your friends and your friends don't know me, but your friends know you. And before we start talking about all of that, maybe it's time to really look at yourself to say, well, what are you doing to make that happen? So part of that, I think, is, and we understand through the text, we understand through Matthew 7, that we have to remove what is in our eye before we start really jumping down somebody else's throat. And we have to do a self-examination before we really start criticizing somebody else. And that's a really big takeaway, I think, for most believers. A lot of believers, we don't do that. Naturally, we just don't do that. And so I think it's important to step back and say, I don't know what that person's going through. I don't know what that person's struggling with. I don't know what kind of sins they're dealing with. I don't know what kind of family drama they have to deal with. I don't know what their work situation is like. So let me try to meet them at a level where I can better understand what's going on in their life. And let me not come in with such pride or such this that that it's going to end up causing problems or causing harm. And I think that's good for all of us to remind ourselves that we might go in and complain to somebody or complain about something without really understanding what we have contributed to that. We have to begin to understand, look in the mirror, what have I contributed? You know, what have I done? Have I sown seeds of discord, or have I sown seeds of green grass in such a way that people can come into relationship with Christ? So we've got to be able to glorify God, get that log out of our own dadgum eye, and then gently restore one another. I think this is where really we talk about speaking the truth in love. This is more than just saying, hey, listen, I know that you think that that tie and that shirt match, but they don't. I'm speaking the truth in love. So many times we've used that phrase as kind of a permissive approach to being able to say what we want to say, but we blanket it with, I'm just telling you the truth in love. Like, I'm just speaking the truth in love. When you look at the context of that passage, that's not what it means. Really what it means is speaking the truth in love is we are always and regularly speaking the truth. The truth is the gospel of Christ. And so we are always telling people the truth of Jesus and the truth of the gospel, the truth of God's word. But we're doing that in such a way because we love them and we care for them. And so when we talk about gently restoring people, we restore people through the relationship with Christ. We restore relationships through the gospel. And so it's important that we remember that piece of conflict management as well. And then lastly is we have to be reconciled. We have to go and be reconciled. One of the things is really pursuing that idea of true forgiveness and restoration. I mean, consider this. We don't want to hold a grudge. There is no benefit from holding a grudge. There's nothing that really we gain from holding a grudge. When we allow those things to sit in our life and to fester, it's like having a big cyst in our body. At some point, it's going to explode and it's going to spew mess all inside of us because we are not allowing ourselves to really pursue true forgiveness and we don't want restoration. We'd rather harbor resentment and be upset with people than actually just figure it out and love people and allow them to see Christ in us and us see Christ in them. When we put Jesus above all those things, then in our relationships with one another and in our relationships, even with ourselves as a church, we put Christ first, then that becomes the baseline for everything. It doesn't mean that you have to be best friends with everyone. And it doesn't mean that you have to bend over backwards to make sure everybody's doing okay. But you can really speak true forgiveness into someone's life, and you can restore that relationship, or you can help bring that person into a place of restoration as well. Sometimes people aren't in a healthy place, and sometimes people are crying out, or they're saying no the loudest because they really need someone to invest spiritually in their life. They need someone to love them. They need someone to listen to them. I've noticed that a lot of time, the people that say no the loudest are usually the ones that don't have a platform to speak their feelings or to speak the things in their life. And so the only time that they lash out is in the areas where they have permission to lash out and just to say no. This doesn't mean that we always say yes, but we always say that whoever says no the loudest is the one that gets their way. And I think there's some truth to that. I think that we don't handle conflict so well where it's like, okay, let's just appease them because we don't want to end up having a situation. No. Let's get down to the understanding. Okay, well, why is it a no? Like, why is it a hard no? Like, what's your rationale behind it? Is it personal? Is it you don't see how it fits within the vision of the church moving forward? You don't see how it fits within our friendship or our relationship? You don't see how it fits within our work or our family? Like, give me the reason of why it's a hard no, and I want to listen to it. And a lot of times I think that that really helps restore people into those relationships together where they can say, well, wait a second. Okay, well, now somebody actually wants to hear what I have to say. I don't feel like I have to speak so loud. And then lastly is just some things that we can do is what are some practical steps that we can have for developing like a culture of peacemaking? Well, I think the first thing is we just have to develop that culture. We have to say, okay, well, we're going to work to make peace today. We're going to work to make sure that things are going well. And then we have to handle difficult conversations with a lot of grace. I think that we have to handle difficult conversations with grace. It's like when you show up to a church conference or business meeting, it's important to listen to all sides, but then handle that conversation with grace, where when you have a question, you don't just shake your head and vocally disagree and grumble and mumble, but rather you say, okay, well, here's my position on that. So how do we understand how these things work, and what's a middle ground? What's a way that we can compromise and kind of get these things moving? You know, where is God leading us? How does this fit within the plan and the vision of our church? And then there's a point though, where we have to seek mediation and biblical reconciliation. This is the one I think people struggle with the most. And this is kind of the one that kind of spurred me on this week. You know, every now and then you run across a case where, a pastor gets confronted or a church leader gets confronted and they don't handle it well. I've seen a few instances where church leaders have been confronted and they've handled it really, really well. They've taken a sabbatical. They've taken a leave. They've done things to get themselves back and reconciled and right. And I think, praise God for those guys who can set those things in motion to say, look, I obviously have allowed this to get the best of me. That's not what we need for fruitful conversations here at our church. So let me take a step back so we can be fruitful in our conversations. I think that that's a culture that has to be created. I think that's a culture that has to be crafted. I think there always has to be a concern and a care for one another, that there may be moments where it's okay to look at someone and say, I think you need to step back from leadership for a little bit until you can get your heart in a good position to better understand how you want to help the church or how you want to help the ministry or how you want to help the friendship move forward. So I think that's just a way to help us through this idea of conflict. Biggest thing though is the Bible speaks a lot about conflict because it's going to be a natural occurrence in life. I don't think that we can get rid of it. I don't think that we can stay away from it, but I do think that it's going to be something that we have to always understand and deal with. I try to tell people as many times as I can, I may present you with an idea or present you with an understanding of something or try to really share with you some of my heart and thoughts. It doesn't mean that I'm a hard, fast, like you have to do this or else type personality. But at the same time, I think there's just things that are on my chest that I just want to get off of my chest and kind of get some feedback to see if there's any sort of understanding moving forward on it. I don't really have an ego that I feel like needs to be stroked in that, hey, listen to me. I'm the authority. Do what I say. That's just, I've never been that way. In fact, I am probably more self-deprecating in that I feel undervalued and worthless most of the time. And I have to tell myself that that's not the case. But I do think that one of the things that we have to consider and look forward with is, even if somebody disagrees with what you have to say, it's okay. It doesn't mean the end of the world. And if there is a large amount of people who you spend some time with through your leadership or through your work or whatever, and you present them an idea and they say, you know what, I just don't think that that's the route we need to go. Okay. Sounds great. Sounds great. Like let's move on to the next topic. And you may be upset about it and you may feel defeated in that moment, but when you really kind of consider it as, you know, this is just one step amongst multiple steps. Okay, well then let's move on to the next step. And if we ever feel like the need to, maybe we can come back to this. But the reality is, let's table this for now and let's keep pushing forward. That's really the goal in all of it. So I don't know if this resonates with anyone. If you want me to expand on this any, I can try to do that as best I can. Again, a good resource for you out there. If you're ever trying to figure out how to do biblical understanding of peacemaking, Ken Sandy's book, The Peacemaker, is a really fantastic resource. You can find it on Amazon, Christian Book, Lifeway. All these resources have it. In fact, if you go on Amazon, you can probably find it used somewhere for like a dollar or two. But it is a great book. I always recommend it. So I encourage you. If you haven't done so, you can pick it up. If you got your Kindle, you can probably download it on your Kindle. Hey, and if you've got a public library card, you can also download the Libby app. I always encourage that because you can search books for free and actually send them to your Kindle as well. So that's what Pastor Charles does. But anyways, let me know what you think about all this. Maybe it fell on great ears. Maybe it fell on deaf ears. Maybe you were hot and charged up before you even started the episode and now you're on fire and you're ready to scream at me. Just give me a call. So, or shoot me an email, whatever it takes. Just charles@pbcshawbro.com. I was at a conference one time and the guy said, hey, if you've got anything against what I have to say, go ahead and send me an email and I'll immediately delete it. I won't do that, but it was kind of funny. I wish I could be that assertive, but I'm just not. So anyways, let me know what you think. And I would love to talk with you and can't wait to see you on Sunday.